Our reading today is also from Howard Thurman. It's called Contradictions Not Final. And it's a story about how two enemies found something within each other's eyes that looked an awful lot like friendship. Two men faced each other in a prison cell. They belonged to different countries. Their roots were watered by streams from different cultures. One was under sentence of death, scheduled to be executed within a few short hours. The other was visitor and friend. This even though months before they had been enemies in a great war. They bade each other farewell for the last time. The visitor was deeply troubled, but he couldn't find a way through the emotional maze to find the words for the utterance of his heart. This is what he wanted to say to his friend, his enemy, his companion, his kin. This is what he wanted to say but could not. You and me, we may not be able to stop and undo the hard old wrongs of the whole great world outside. But through you and me, through we two, no evil shall come either in the unknown where you are going or in this imperfect and haunted dimension through which I move. Through you and me, no more evil will come. Thus between us, right now, we shall cancel out all private and personal evil. We shall arrest all private and personal consequences of action and reaction. Thus here, now, we shall prevent specifically the general incomprehension and misunderstanding, hatred and revenge of our time from spreading any further. Through you and me, no evil shall come into this or any other world. For you and me, the bitter enmity is done. For you and for me, the hatred stops here. That is what he wanted to say, but could not. So I have to begin today with a clarification, I guess. I'm going to talk about peace, and I'm going to talk about finding each other in the eyes of our enemies. But I am not doing this as a fancy metaphorical way of telling us to get out of Iraq. I'm doing this as a way of asking ourselves to begin within, to begin within, inside each of us, to ask how we can see the other reflected in our own hearts. Then we can ask how governments can do it. Then we can ask how wars can end. But we start here. We start inside. And the work goes onward from that precious and difficult beginning. So the metaphor today, the metaphor we begin with, is not two men sitting in a prison cell lambasting the evils of other people. It is two men sitting in a prison cell looking in each other's eyes and trying to find there some commonality. Two men who sit there, to all outward appearances, as separate and as different as two men can be. One man is behind bars, the other is not. One man is doomed, the other is free. One man is named guilty, the other named virtuous. In Howard Thurman's story, there sit two men whose circumstances could not be more different. But though only one wears irons, both are chained. The chains they wear bind one just as surely as they bind the other. They are chains of silence rather than steel. They twist in and around the hearts and the minds of these two men. The chains of silence constrict their throats. They rob them of the strength to speak the only honest words that are left. The words never spoken. The only true words once all the fighting's done. The words never spoken were all that mattered in the end. That it would stop here. Between you and me. The visiting man wanted to say, between you and me, there will be no more of this. No more evil, no more death, no more common and banal destruction. Between you and me, on this specific, perfect level, there will be no more, for I am your brother and you are mine. All of the blind consequences, all of the actions and reactions of war are nothing compared to the fact that in this minute we can look past the hard old wrongs and see each other finally again as members of the same family. But the chains were strong and the words weren't spoken. And another chance to say the only thing that matters slipped away again down to the gallows, where once again an enemy met their end, where once again the age-old story of every people and every nation, an age-old story of violence and retribution continued. You guys know how much I love words. I have this thing in my head that says that even if it will never happen, I want everything that ought to be said to be said. I feel like saying things makes them real, as if words crystallize reality. And so it breaks my heart that the words were never spoken, that he never said it. But the truth is that maybe those words didn't need to be said. Maybe two soldiers don't need to talk to know they are brothers. The two one-time enemies didn't need to proclaim their interrelation in vociferous words, didn't need to give orations to know that it was true. Though the chains of silence bound them, perhaps those two men were also held by another higher freedom, even if they couldn't say it. Couldn't see through the cloud of emotional complexity enough to speak their kinship. Perhaps they felt it. And Howard Thurman tells us this story not as a sad tale, the words didn't get spoken, but as a great victory won because the contradictions between these two men didn't last forever. He called that piece, Contradictions Not Final. And that's the message he intends us to get from that story. One man goes on to his death, another goes on to his life, and the outcome is the same as the outcome has ever been, but the effect is different. Because these men, going their separate ways, parting company, know for a fact in their hearts that no boundary between persons is permanent. They saw shared humanity in each other's eyes. And once seen, it was a view that could not be forgotten. Now, Howard Thurman was one of the great preachers and writers of his age, and he was no sunny optimist. He was an African-American clergyman with a mystical approach to religion. And he wrote that story in 1951. In 1951... For Howard Thurman, the contradictions of society were as pronounced as they have ever been, and there was no getting away from it. And yet, for him to believe, even then, for him to believe that no boundary between persons is permanent had to be an act of great faith, 1951, many of you will know, is 6 years after the close of the deadliest war in human history. And Thurman wrote that little story in the collective shadow of the concentration camps. And he wrote that little story to a nation that would soon be unable to ignore its own racism and systematic oppression. World War II was a study in extreme nationalism, the kind that opens wide the door to fascism and the Jim Crow South from which Howard Thurman so often preached, was a study in racism so ingrained as to be spiritually blinding. This was not a man who was optimistic about human nature. But this was a man who believed we could see ourselves as family. At that time in 1951, everywhere one looked, there were seeming contradictions that built up walls between men and women, races, creeds, and nationalities. And viewing the world from a certain and very common perspective, there were potential enemies at every corner. But Thurman tried to look in every corner from a different perspective and see in the many different faces he encountered not some villainous other, but his own family. He had seen and he had felt the impact of life's contradictions, and he wanted people of faith to know that such contradictions couldn't last forever if individuals looked in each other's eyes and patently refused to generalize away their shared humanity. There were, he said, forces at work in the world which seemed to determine the future. Impersonal forces, abstract forces, he said, that press in on us and surround our imaginations until we can scarcely imagine what shared kinship, brotherhood, and sisterhood really look like anymore. There are forces that press in on us, he said, until no one is a brother anymore, but only a German or a Jew or a Japanese or a Negro or a Catholic, a girl, a retard, a homo, a commie. They press in on us till no one is a sister, but only a certain category of woman, a type like other types, generalized so impersonally as to take away people's responsibility to care for them. A Sunni, a Shiite, an Israeli, a Palestinian, an American, a liberal, a conservative, a suit, a hippie, a kid, a geezer, a Christian. All categories, all abstract brands of person that others find a way to discount, degrade, or destroy because of the pure abstraction with which we think of them. These are the vast impersonal forces that hold human beings at a safe enough distance to allow us to destroy each other. These are the vast impersonal forces that tell us we don't share our humanity, and they are the essence of everyday, run-of-the-mill, happens-all-the-time human evil. They are the grand generalizations that rob us of our ability to be family to each other. And they are what kills us, what steers the airplane into the building, what pulls the trigger. Vast, impersonal forces. They are what's killing us. What's killing us now in Darfur, in the Sudan, in Baghdad, in Beirut, in Israel, in the streets of Baltimore, in the parking lots of suburban shopping malls where gang members shoot each other out of pride and poor families suffer without health care. These vast, impersonal forces that generalize our humanity away, they are what's killing us. And salvation from such forces cannot be attained through the workings of some distant God. Salvation from these vast impersonal forces can only come through the transforming power of relationship, can only come through a holy change in perspective from the impersonal, the distant, the vague, to the personal, the here, the now, the real. Between you and me, brother, there will be no more you and me. It was Jesus who said, love your enemies. And it was He also who said, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. And I don't deny that those are worthy aims. But I am no idealist. Though perhaps some days I wish I were. And I know that those commandments are quite stringent. When I look at this world and I see its seeming contradictions, when I see us struggling just to stay in relationship to one another, most days I would be happy if we could simply follow a dictum to see your enemies. Just see them. Even if you cannot love them, even if the only defensible thing to do is to keep fighting, see them. And once we do, to let ourselves see in their eyes a modeled and changeable reflection of our own. Kurt Vonnegut tells a story about fighting with rebel forces against the fascists in the Spanish Civil War. Now, Kurt Vonnegut was an American intellectual with a flair for the dramatic. He was young and he had a deep sense of personal responsibility, and he voluntarily enlisted to fight in someone else's army because he believed so literally in the fight for freedom. So Vonnegut, as a young man, did this. He went to Spain. He fought alongside brothers and sisters. And one day, as he was crouching in a trench, aiming his weapon at an enemy parapet, his own rebel aircraft started to fly over that enemy parapet. And in an instant, he saw an enemy combatant. The man was half-dressed, and he was struggling to get away from the line of fire. And as he ran and tripped, he stumbled right into clear range of Vonnegut's gun. Vonnegut imagined that it was very likely he was carrying a message to fascist leaders telling them that the airstrike had begun. This was no non-combatant. But as the man ran, he stumbled to hold up his still unbelted pants, both hands working to maintain his dignity while both feet ran toward safety. And unlike so many enemies before and after, Vonnegut did not take aim at this man. Remembering this event later, he wrote, I did not shoot partly because of that detail about his trousers. You see, I had come to shoot fascists, but a man who's holding up his trousers isn't a fascist. He's a visibly fellow creature, similar to yourself, and you just don't feel like shooting at him. That simple thing, a pair of trousers, a fearful run, transformed a fascist into a man, a target into a fellow, and either Vonnegut couldn't shoot or didn't shoot. The abstract had been made concrete. He had seen a man where once he only saw a category, and though the enemy was real and the task at hand was to fight the fascist, that man's finger was stilled. To what end, we don't know. Perhaps that man with his trousers went on to deliver his message and more men died than if he had been taken out. Perhaps many things. But Vonnegut never forgot. A decade later, it was one of the few specific moments he thought to put on paper from that bloody war. See your enemies. Their trousers clenched in awkward hands, their sunken cheeks from too little food. See your enemies. And if you must pull a trigger, if you must march ahead, do so knowing that your own heart will break bit by bit every step of the way. That is a courage I cannot fathom. That is a courage beyond my ability to comprehend. But there are those who can and do hold such courage. There are men and women like that. Some of them are your children, your grandchildren, soldiers and leaders whose hearts break every time they do their jobs well. Some of them are you. I am so sorry that it has to hurt so bad. And yet, in my heart, I know that it must hurt. I am sorry that you have to bear that burden. I am no pacifist. I'm not idealistic enough for that. But I know that war should be named for what it is, something terrible, rather than distant and cold and abstract. And I know that it is the armed forces of every nation who have to bear the burden of that terror, not just in their bodies, but in their souls. Again, it is a courage I cannot fathom. It is a debt I cannot repay. See your enemies, the dictum goes. See them. See yourself in them and do only what you must, so that someday, somewhere, when all have had the chance to see as you have seen, we all will think 10,000 times before pointing our weapons at each other, before writing each other off, before assuming things about each other, before tearing away the commonality that holds us one and all. The vast impersonal forces. Forces that cause us to see anyone not like us as a participant in that thing we call the other. Those forces change human beings into symbols, and symbols are easy to destroy. But relationships change people back into people again. And people are another matter entirely. People are family. People are our relations. People are our kin. And as the Reverend Marjorie Bowens Wheatley said, we are co-creators with God in bringing about the kindom of God, where humanity will transcend its loyalties of particularity from individual to group identity to a recognition of our essential relatedness. She said that we're called to co-create the kindom, not the kingdom. There are plenty of kingdoms. There are plenty of fiefdoms and oligarchies and superpowers. There are enough ruling classes and dictators and tyrants. We don't need another kingdom. Morally, we are called to enable the realization of a kindom, a family, where brothers and sisters won't have to take aim at each other anymore, where none can deny the interdependent web that weaves us together, and the only way we can create the kingdom is to see one another, to get specific about all the things we too easily generalize. To create the kingdom is to say that a person is not a German or a Jew or a Sunni or a Shiite or a partisan loyalist, but Bob, Moshe, Ahmed, George, family, companion, kin. We Unitarian Universalists often enjoy speaking in grand, sweeping generalizations about justice and vision and a world made fair with all her people one. But generalizations don't save anybody's broken soul. Only specifics do. Only people in relationship to one another. If enough people with enough power can dare to look through the bars that separate them, break through the silence and say to one another, in the words of two old enemies, We may not be able to stop and undo the hard old wrongs of the great world outside, but through you and me, no evil shall come, either in the unknown where you are going or in this imperfect and haunted dimension in which I move. Thus, between us, we shall cancel out all personal and private evil, thus arrest private and personal consequences to blind action and reaction, thus prevent specifically the general incomprehension, misunderstanding, hatred, and revenge of our time from spreading further. Let us see one another. Let us see those whom we too casually dismiss. Let us see the people we think are so irreparably different from ourselves, know them to be a part of our family, and thus prevent together the general incomprehension and misunderstanding, hatred and rage that is the greatest plague of our time. May the kingdom come, if only partially. And let us start with ourselves by seeing and by naming those hard old wrongs that still separate us from the human family. May the kingdom come, and may it begin within our own hearts. May it be so, and amen.